Welcome to the NorCal Real Estate Show, where we're talking all things real estate in Yolo, Sacramento, and Solano counties. My name is Jeremy Higgins. I am the team lead of the Higgins team at eXp Realty, and I am here with my partner,
Andrew Lujewski.
And Nate Darling, our incredible producer here at Darling New Media Studios. How you doing? I can never get that one out. But how you doing, Nate?
I'm doing great. We are almost to fall. Summer is starting to wane. Getting more reasonable temperatures outside, so it's an exciting time to be alive.
No doubt. I wore my sweater on my walk last night. That was crazy.
Halloween stuff's already out at the stores.
Yeah, no doubt.
Still in August.
Nate, did you miss us, buddy? We've been gone for 3 weeks. Can you believe it?
I did miss you guys. I've been getting ready on Tuesdays and all excited. I have a new employee here. I brought her in for training, and we had extra time to train and do dry runs.
Well, I do genuinely feel bad.
Oh, no. That's fine. There's no reason to feel bad. I'm sure you guys will get to meet her soon enough. She was very excited to see the show. I've been telling people about your show. Just to talk about what great things you guys are getting from it, from your social game and everything that goes along with that. So, yeah, even though you haven't been here in the building, you have very much been on my lips.
All right. It's been cool. The social media has been off the hook. I mean, people are finding this
show.
Got some
really great positive responses.
It's been amazing. It's been a lot of fun. I do feel like a little bit local famous, actually. Everybody wants to talk about it when we run into them at the restaurants and the shows and all that good stuff. So, but yeah, I was gone. I was on vacation / work conferences for the last 3 weeks. The intention was for Mr. Andrew Lujewski to be in here and shoot this pod on his own. But
I couldn't
you know
put
what?
It together. I'm sorry,
man. Well, we got way busy right when I decided to leave. That's in the real estate business. That's how it works, man. If you ever want to increase your business, you just have to schedule time away and then the phone rings. So Andrew has been crazy. I think we put, I don't know. I think we're dealing with like somewhere around 12 different deals, just over the last 3 weeks. So,
I mean, we're putting three to four homes a week on the market right now. And you decide to take off and go on vacation.
Thank you, bud.
And
thank
just, you. I got buried for a couple of weeks.
So that's that. We are back. Next week, we are going to bring in a wonderful lender, Nate Pena with Fairway Mortgage, and we're going to talk all things lending. So if you guys are in the buying mode and you want to hear a little bit about lending, stay tuned for that. But today, we're going to talk about the most current state of the market. Look, unless you've been living under a rock, you most likely have seen a little bit of a market change, have we not?
Little bit. Things are starting to slow down. We're getting towards the end of the summer. Things naturally start to plateau and slow down. People are going back to school. Sacramento school started last Thursday or the Thursday before? So
in some areas they don't even start till this Wednesday. But yeah, we're going to break all that down. We're going to let you know what it means. Where's this market going? It's going to be a little bit detailed, but I think it will be interesting. We're also going to discuss the 5 biggest mistakes most sellers make. Don't be that seller. We want to talk about that because as the market has slowed, I think it's important that sellers step up and do things the right way. No longer are you just going to be able to put a sign in the yard, a lockbox on the door, and collect your 15 offers. But before we get into that, we want to get into our quick tip of the day. What do we got, Andrew?
Yeah, so we've touched on this before, but if you've bailed out of the market, you know, over the last few months because, you know, competition was too stiff, now's your time to jump back in. Market is starting to plateau a little bit, starting to slow down. The number of offers are starting to drop a little bit. So if you've lost out on a house, you know, don't feel too bad about yourself. If you put an offer in on a house and you don't get it, ask your agent to put you in backup position because we're starting to see more and more homes starting to drop out of escrow. And people in backup position are getting their second opportunity and they're able to land that home, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks sometimes after they got that first notice that they didn't get the home.
Man, I can't agree more. This market has, we were in a gnarly, gnarly market over the last several months. I know many of us were begging for a slowdown, and look what happened. We finally got it, and others are choosing to freak out about it. But look, I think you're crazy if you don't get in this market. Now is the time to get in the market. Interest rates are still incredible. And we'll talk about a lot of the stats. This market's not going anywhere. And I do want to second this whole backup offer position. I think this is something that very few people are paying attention to. But for a multitude of reasons, houses are coming back on the market quite rapidly. I think a lot of it has to do with buyers' emotions and psychology mm-hmm. and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, what we find is that we'll get 3-4 offers on a house and then we'll accept one, and then that buyer ends up bailing out. Their loan wasn't approved, whatever it was. We go back to buyer number two, and buyer number two's lost interest. Very, very common. Go to buyer number three, they've lost interest. Very common. And I think the reason for that is we're all human. And I think it's human nature that when your heart gets hurt, and
you get rejected.
Nobody wants to be rejected. I think it's human nature that we just try to emotionally detach ourselves from the situation to protect ourselves. So it's hard to go back to a buyer and re-engage them. But if you are a buyer, I encourage you to treat a rejected offer similar to the way we would treat a counteroffer. Look, when you put an offer on a house, you get a counteroffer on that. It doesn't mean you lost out on the house. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to take it a step further and say if your offer is initially rejected, that does not mean that you've lost out on the house. I haven't taken the exact stats, but I've been talking to a lot of the people in our business, a lot of the folks in the business watching the MLS, that kind of stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if 1 in 5 homes at this point are coming back on the market. So it's there. The chances are there, and then you end up getting it for a better price. So stay in the game.
As a buyer, you kind of have to really, I know it's tough because it's a personal thing. It's where you want to live. It's where you want to make your home. But you really have to treat it as the business deal that it is. And if at first it doesn't work, maybe it'll come around for you as long as you don't get too hurt over it.
No doubt. No doubt. Look, this market, I think we can all agree, has been bananas. Prices have appreciated so fast that inevitably, that talk of the market crash mm-hmm. has started to creep in. Yeah.
And every year they talk about a market crash, right? Oh, this is going to be the year. It's going to decline. It's going to flatten out. We hear about that. We've been hearing about it since 2014 when the market started, you know, creeping back up after the big crash in 08. And 15%, 20% a year appreciation is not sustainable, right?
Not at all.
So we're starting to see things plateau, but things are still selling above asking price, right? Couple percent, which is what we want to see. That's a good, healthy market. 2 to 3% appreciation rate is perfect.
Yeah. I mean, I've been selling houses now 16 years and I see this, I hear this every single year. And I'd say us real estate agents are probably the worst. As soon as, you know, we're not getting all these offers, and as soon as things aren't selling within hours or days, we start freaking out. Is this the next crash? Look, we're going to go into a lot of these stats. I personally don't believe. I mean, could it happen? Like, in the realm of possibilities, anything can happen. But you're going to hear some stuff, some stats coming up here that I hope will put you at ease. This is a natural seasonal slow. Andrew mentioned it earlier. School starting, lots of different things are starting. People are coming back from vacation. I was just gone for 3 weeks, man. We were trying to get all our vacations mm-hmm. in, making up for the last year that we didn't get to do anything. So just hang tough. And I feel really strongly, that this, we could look back a year from now, 5 years from now, and realize that this time right now could have been the best time to buy. If you didn't buy last year, the next best time to buy is today. 100%. That's how I feel about it.
So when it comes to market shifts, they don't happen overnight. You know, it's tough to see a market shift when it's happening. You have to wait a quarter or two afterwards and look back on it. But you also have to look at economic factors. We have to keep interest rates low to keep things going right now. And when the interest rates are low, historically low, right, like 2.75, 3%, amazing interest rates, it's always a good time to buy.
Agreed. 100%. According to NAR, National Association of Realtors, homes appreciated this year nationally at 23.4%. Incredible. 23.4%.
Bananas.
That is the second highest level on record. Did you know that
before? I had no idea.
At least going back to Y2K. You remember Y2K, by the way? Nate, you remember Y2K?
Heck yeah, I remember Y2K.
Our computers are going to blow.
Oh, yeah. There were freakouts all over the place. I was working in local TV at the time, and there was a huge panic and trying to get everything Y2K compliant, so that there was this fear that all of your files were going to disappear from your hard drives and everything was going to go away, and it turned out to be nothing.
It turned out to be nothing, fortunately. But yeah, this is the second highest level recorded since way back when in Y2K, 21 years ago. The average days on market this year, nationally, 17 days. And keep in mind here locally in the Sacramento, Solano, Yolo County areas, it was lower than that. We had some areas that were less than 1 month's worth of inventory. So nationally, the inventory last year was 2.6 months. So what is months of inventory? Months of inventory basically means if not a single house were listed, how long would it take for every house on the market to sell at the pace that buyers are buying?
Completely sold out.
Completely sold out. It would take 2.6 months. Economists say that 6 months is what we would call a balanced market, meaning anything less than 6 months, it is a seller's market. It's to the seller's advantage. You're usually going to see housing prices appreciating. Anything under 6 months. Over 6 months, that is when you get into the buyer's market and you're likely going to see things depreciating. So annually, over this last year, we were at 2.6 months. In our area, it was much less than that. 17 days on the market, super fast. You got to keep in mind, a lot of those houses were selling in hours, but then you always have those little outliers, people that decide to list it $300,000 over what it's worth and it sits there forever, right?
Well, 2.6 months, that's a national average. I think Sacramento area as a whole, I was looking at some numbers this morning. In April and May, we were at 0.6 months of inventory.
0.6 months. That's nuts.
So that's like just over 2 weeks, right? If we didn't have any more homes come on the market, we would completely sell out of homes in 2 weeks.
Half a month. That's crazy.
That's nuts.
Tough market. That's why we're saying now is the opportunity. I do think that months of inventory is probably going to creep up a little bit over the season.
It was at 0.6 was the lowest. And right now we're right at about, I think, 0.9. is where we're at. Slight improvement,
big increase,
right?
There. So seasonally, it's very common to see this. Seasonally, many of you know this, right? You have to be living under a rock not to know this. But in the spring and the summer, activity picks up. People are changing schools, job relocations. A lot happens in the summer and the spring. And that's when most of the activity starts to happen. And then in the wintertime, people get busy with different things. The weather's not as good. Holidays get jam-packed in there. And so we typically see things kind of slow down. So that's what's happening now. I don't know about you, but I haven't necessarily seen much of a price depreciation.
It's very slight. So back to the numbers thing again, April, May, Sacramento, greater Sacramento region, we were selling on average, it was about 104% of the sales price is what we were at, right? 4% above average. As of July, we came down to 103%. So inventory went up by, 30%, our days on market, about 30%. And then our price went up or came down 1%. Sorry.
You're a stat machine, bro.
I try. But that's slight indicators, right? We're creeping into fall a little bit. Things are slowing, down just slightly.
So does that mean that we're in a crash?
Absolutely not.
Probably not. Let's talk about the crash. Because I think it's helpful to know, what caused the last crash, and that helps educate us and helps make us feel more, or helps us feel more confident moving forward. So the last crash happened, right around 2007, I think it depends on the area again. I think in our area, it started a little bit closer to 2005, but by 2007, we were in a full-on crash. And I think it's important to talk about, what caused that. First of all, we had some crazy lending practices in place. We had excessively low interest rates. And look, we have really, really low interest rates right now, 2.75 in some cases. That's super awesome. But what I'm talking about is back then, prior to the 2007, we had those interest-only loans. I remember those interest-only loans. Oh, my goodness. Well, you could have a 1% interest rate for the first 5 years of your loan, for example. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, you were only paying for interest. So you weren't even buying down your principal, which means your payment was less. So people were buying these homes that were way beyond their capabilities as far as financially. And then you know what started to happen in 2005, 6, and 7? A lot of those interest-onlys that people were getting in 2000, 2001, and 2, they all started to reset. That 5 years came to an end, and now they had to jump back up to the original interest rate. And on top of that, they had to start paying principal. And on top of that, they had to pay principal over 25 years instead of 30. So people were seeing their payments triple in many cases. Triple. Well, they were qualified based on the very, very low interest rate of 1% and only in the interest only. I mean, the interest only, not principal. So when your payment triples overnight, that might be a little bit tough for many people to adjust to. So they, you know, got through it for a little bit longer because they would just refinance the house, pull out $100,000, and they would live off that $100,000. And then eventually the prices started to stabilize, much like what we're seeing today. Mm-hmm. And they could not refinance their home, and therefore they could not afford that triple payment.
Yeah, I think I wasn't around in real estate in 2005, right? I was a little bit too young for that.
Were you still in diapers?
I was. But I did live through that experience, right? My parents had bought a home in 2004, 2005, and they were talked into an interest only, you know, adjustable rate mortgage. And they were fine for about 2 years. And then it came for, you know, their loan modification, or not loan modification, but they had to start paying an actual legitimate interest rate and paying principal. And their payment went from, I think, $1,500 to like $3,500 bucks. Yeah. And I think a lot of people across the country were looking at it like, this isn't sustainable. We can't pay $3,500 bucks a month. And a lot of people just rode it out as long as they could, burned their savings, and then, you know, lost the house.
Yeah, it was not a good time. Not a good time at all. The moral of the story is we're not there now. We've been, you know, selling houses throughout this entire uptick since probably 2012 is when we started the uptick again. Mm-hmm. And I can't recall seeing a single interest only loan come out. So most of the folks that have been buying the houses over the last decade or so have been purchasing it with conventional style loans. The laws changed. They were required to qualify off of the full payment, not an interest only payment. So, you know, as long as wages do not go down, there's really no reason to believe that people aren't going to be able to continue to afford to pay their mortgage payments. So I think that's a big thing that cannot be ignored. There's also another thing. From 2000 to 2007, every one of those years had at least 1 million new homes built in the United States. In 2004 to 2007, it was as many as 2 million homes a year were being built. That was the time just prior to the crash. So inventory was plentiful. After the crash, housing starts, that's what we call them, plummeted all the way down to 500,000 homes a year. That's it, 500,000 homes a year. We didn't even get back up to the 1 million mark until just last year,
mm-hmm.
right? So we have been seeing this housing shortage just increase and increase and increase, and there's lots of reasons for that. A lot of bureaucratic regulations have come into play. You know, it just took a long time for those builders to kick back into gear and do that. So, I mean, it could take 2 to 3 years of record-breaking housing inventory increases for us to even touch the surface of being at a kind of an equilibrium of where we should be. So as long as there's a housing shortage like that, folks, I don't see how we can have a massive plummet in pricing. The demand is insane right now for multiple reasons. We've talked about it before, interest rates obviously being one of them. NerdWallet conducted a survey that revealed 28 million Americans said they plan to purchase a home in the next 5 years. 28 million. And here's the thing that really struck me. 26 million of those folks are going to be first-time homebuyers.
Well, they say right now is the peak of millennials purchasing right now, right? A lot of millennials, late 20s, early 30s, just getting into their first home. So that makes perfect sense.
Man, we're getting into the weeds a little bit here, but yeah, the first time home buyer is older now than they've been going back since stats have been taken, meaning that the younger folks, they waited longer and longer before they bought a home. They were just cruising around and enjoying life instead of buying homes. And now many of them are now in a place where they want to buy a home now. So 26 million Americans are expected to be first-time home buyers in the next 5 years. That's a pretty good number of people, especially when you consider last year in 2020, which was a pretty decent year. There were only 5.64 million homes sold across the entire United States.
Well,
it's more than five times the number of buyers are expected to buy.
Right. And all those people need somewhere to live, and we're at a housing shortage. So we need to keep building.
Yep.
So
folks, the numbers don't lie. It appears that we are in store for continued demand for the foreseeable future. So all those points, all those points don't necessarily point to a continued rapid appreciation, though, do they?
Not quite. And like we already mentioned, appreciating at 20% a year is just not sustainable. It's not good for anyone. But, 2-4% a year appreciation is healthy, it's affordable, and keeps our market going. Houses right now are being built like crazy. We talked about the crash, our area specifically, Natomas, which you bought in. What year did you buy there?
2002, 2003.
So you were right at the peak of the boom of them building out there. And then we hit 2008, and construction came to a halt for almost 10 years out there. Okay. Yeah,
the flood zone.
Flood zone deal. And the economy was down. But now that we're back up to building again, they are putting up homes everywhere, every side of the freeway, next to the airport, the whole deal. So,
yeah. But again, I mean, last year there was only 1 million home starts. So it's still pretty low. I think the reason that appreciation must slow down, we've said it in previous podcasts that now is probably one of the most affordable times overall to purchase a house, even though housing prices have gone up because interest rates have gone down. People have their savings and all that kind of stuff. It's a pretty affordable time to purchase. With that being said, wages have not increased at the rate that appreciation has. So there has to come a point when we're going to hit this level of prices that the wages just aren't going to support. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to turn around and go backwards and start going down. It just means that the prices are going to start to appreciate slower or flatten out, and they're going to mimic more of the wage growth. Makes sense, right?
Yeah, I think this is just my opinion. I haven't actually run the numbers on it, but beginning of COVID, March 2020, we saw this huge drop in interest rates, right? So these houses that were $450,000 now have this super low interest rate, and it's now more like buying a $350,000 house. And everyone jumped on the bandwagon, buy. Now that $450,000 house has the affordability, or those, how do I say it?
I don't know, you gotta say it.
So a house that was $450,000, but pre-COVID, is now $550,000.
Correct.
And your monthly payment's the same. So we just saw like this kind of market upshift with the drop in interest rates. And yeah. I think we just kind of, met its match. And I think we kind of peaked out with that. Yeah. And things are starting to taper off and flatten out a little bit.
So if there's anything that's going to have any type of a squeeze on appreciation, it's going to be those interest rates.
Correct.
I don't know when those are going to go up, but it feels to me that they can only go up. I don't expect that that the economists or the government's going to want to necessarily increase those quite rapidly. But as those increase, then that will also reduce affordability, which then is going to, put a little bit of a cap on the type of appreciation. Based on all this information, we've said it before. I, without a doubt, believe that if you're a buyer in today's market and you do not buy, you're simply crazy. You're simply crazy. I'd also like to touch on a previous episode where we were talking about when to sell. And I'm not completely convinced that that a person even needs to sell at this point. However, I am at a place now where I feel like if you sold, you've reduced your risk of potentially leaving a lot of money on the table into the future. Like if you sold last year, you left a ton of money on the table.
Almost 20%.
Yeah, tons of money on the table. I think if you sold now, I don't know if you would necessarily be leaving a ton on the table. You're going to leave some. The other thing about selling now is it was really, really difficult to sell last year because you couldn't sell, but it's because where you move, mm-hmm. you can't find a place to live. And so now that things have kind of slowed down a little bit seasonally, February, May just kick right back up, by the way. I don't know if it's going to kick up to this level, but it's going to kick up, no doubt about it. But nonetheless, now is this really great equilibrium where you can sell your house and you might have a good chance of actually finding a house to buy. So could be a good time to sell as well. Anything else you want to, that was a really, really detailed subject there. But you know, we had to have this discussion because we're hearing it every day. People are freaking out. The media is starting to touch in on it, and us real estate agents are the worst.
Well, I'm a big numbers guy. Okay. And you always hear people talk about the market, but it's always nice to hear what's going on and then also actually see the numbers. So you can see visually what's actually happening. People are talking about a market crash. Okay. Prices have dropped 1% over the course of 2 months, and we're dead middle of summer going into fall, in which we would see that those numbers fall off anyways.
Correct.
So I'm not worried about it.
No, I'm not either. And we'll just have to archive this one and see how correct we are. But I feel pretty confident that we're going to be correct. So now having all of that information, I do think it's fair to talk about sellers a little bit before we close this out today, in that sellers are in a slightly different position today than they were 2 months ago. I said it before, you can't necessarily put a sign in the yard, lockbox on there, and expect it to sell within hours. So I think the sellers have to do things right. So we want to talk about the 5 mistakes most sellers make, and don't be that seller. The first one, we've said it before, they don't plan far enough ahead. We have a couple of stories like that. Recently, actually, we're not going to talk about them right now just because we don't want to throw some of our people under the bus. But I mean, we got a call a couple weeks ago from a seller at in the evening, Friday evening, and she wanted to meet Saturday at 8:30. So we go over there at 8:30 in the morning on Saturday, mm-hmm. and we start throwing down our spiel. You know, this is what we got to do, X, Y, Z. She's like, nah, I want to know the market today. We had the thing listed at 4:30 that afternoon. Well, you can imagine we didn't have any time to get inspections. We talked about the core 5. We didn't have time to get the house staged. We didn't have time to create all of the interest in it by marketing it a little bit earlier than we allow showings, all that kind of stuff. None of that got to happen. Fortunately, we still got it sold. But man, that's not the way to do it. You're going to get far more money if you prep it ahead of time. Number 2. They don't pay attention to the market and they price their home incorrectly. Now, you've heard this a million times. People say, don't overprice your home. Look, I'm okay with pricing homes high. Andrew will tell you that. I'm okay with it, but it needs to be done correctly, and it needs to be done in the right scenarios. So at the end of the day, our goal is always to get the highest possible price for a house. And the list price doesn't necessarily equate to what you're going to get from a house. It's just simply a strategy. And every neighborhood's different. We're in micro markets. So some neighborhoods, we may want to price on the high end of the range. Others, if we know that there's going to be just a ton of activity, we may want to price it a little bit lower and drive that competition, which then drives the prices up. But it's important that you look at these things really in depth, the pricing, the market for your neighborhood, and that kind of stuff. So seek professional advice. Trust your realtor. Trust
us.
Yeah, just come to us. That's the better way to do it. Number 3, they have unreasonable expectations of the process. This one can be frustrating. We're talking about showings, flaky buyers, keeping your house clean. Showings. You want to touch on showings a little bit? Some of the frustration that sellers have with that, unreasonable expectations they have with that?
Yeah, I mean, it can be especially tough when you have kids, right? You know, you get a scheduled showing for your house. You got to pack up the kids. You got to pack up the dog, clean up the house real quick. And then you try to jet out of the house and make time for that showing. And then you go, and some people have Ring doorbells. They have security cameras. And then the sellers like to watch in, right? See who's coming in their house. And
buyer beware.
Yeah. Don't say anything that might give yourself away. But you know, sellers like to tune in and watch. And sometimes they see someone come in and a buyer's only there for 5 minutes. And then the seller's like, well, you know, if they're only there for 5 minutes, why'd they schedule a showing? That was a waste of time. We had to pack up the kids and this and that. But at the end of the day, it wasn't the right house for the buyer, right? They walked in, they just didn't get that feeling that, you know, this was the house. And sometimes buyers have a hard time seeing that because they love their own house, right? Everyone loves their own house. And they have a hard time understanding why someone else doesn't also love that house too.
Yeah, 100%. Look, at the other thing going along with showings, I think sellers oftentimes get a bit restrictive on their showings. And we understand, again, you got families, many of you are working from home these days, so it makes it difficult. But understand that the more people who know about your house, the more showings you get. The more showings you get is what gets you more offers. And it's those offers that you use to negotiate up to the highest possible price. So anytime you restrict the number of showings, you're absolutely going to restrict the number of offers that you receive. If you restrict the number of offers you receive, you're restricting your ability to negotiate up to the highest possible price. So keep your showing windows open the best you can. We got to keep you sane throughout the process. We realize that, but you know, we got to do it. And, you know, of course we can call each agent and we can do, you know, a 50 question questionnaire of how serious their buyer is and all that kind of stuff. But look, we've been representing buyers for a long time too. And we've shown houses that we would have never expected a buyer to buy. And they walk in that house and they fall in love.
Happens all the time.
I made a couple of mistakes like that before where I go in and I start talking trash about the home and all of a sudden they start like talking about they love it. And I'm like, oh, zip my lips. So, you know, if somebody comes in, they see it for 5 minutes and they leave, it wasn't the house for them, but that doesn't necessarily mean that there was anything wrong with your house. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is. If you own a home now, you've been in that position as a buyer, you know, most of you didn't buy the very first house you walked into. Another thing I want to prepare you for right now, these buyers are beat up right now. And so psychologically they are a mess. And I think you'll find that buyers are a bit flaky these days. They may seem kind of excited. They're not supposed to, but I think we're seeing that folks are writing offers on multiple properties at the same time, not disclosing that. And then you accept their offer, but they have an offer accepted on another house and they bail on you. Don't freak. It's just nature of the beast.
That's the real estate game. And that's getting to the point of receiving an offer too, right? Sometimes it's not uncommon for a buyer or an agent to reach out, schedule an appointment, and then that buyer never shows up. They get called into work. They don't have the courtesy to reach out and say, hey, we're not going to make it. The seller's there watching their Ring doorbell and they don't see anyone show up. And then they turn around and yell at us and shoot the messenger. Okay.
You can do that. If it makes you feel better, you want to, that's what we get paid to do. But, and look, I mean, we don't want to say that this is something that happens all the time. But we do want to make you aware of it. It does happen. Don't get too frustrated. It's just, like I said, it's the nature of the beast. Number four.
Before you move on, guys, yeah. I just want to, this sort of occurred to me as you're talking about that. It is a pain in the neck to pack everybody up and get out of the house and let it be open for a showing. But I think if you think about it this way, if I am open to more showings and I have more offers and I can negotiate that way, we're talking about how much extra? $20,000, $30,000, $40,000? Is it worth that much money for you to pack up the kids those extra three or four times and get out of the house for a showing? And if you can honestly say, no, it's not worth $40,000 for me to do that, then by all means, restrict the number of showings. But if you sort of look at it that way in the bigger picture of it, as opposed to that moment of frustration, and I totally get it because packing up the kids can be a nightmare, but you really have to think about it that way if you're looking to sell, right?
Oh, it's refreshing to hear you say that, Nate. It is refreshing to hear you say that. Yeah, I mean, you don't know. None of us have a crystal ball. You don't have a crystal ball. We don't know which buyer is going to be that buyer that's super excited. And so you just got to let them all in, and you just got to deal with some of those flaky ones. That's just the nature of the beast. So number four is one that I tend to talk about the most. Like, I just get frustrated. I talk with Andrew all the time, and I get frustrated about this. Putting too much money into your house before you sell it. I think this now more than ever is probably the greatest challenge that we run into. I was just at an open house this weekend. Somebody came in, was talking about pouring $30,000, $40,000 into their house in, I think it was in the Antelope area, something like that. And she was telling me about all the things that she was doing. If you put a ton of money into your house right now with a market that is not, you know, getting those, 8% over, mm-hmm. over list price offers, I think you're putting yourself at a huge risk. You know, the last several months, if you over improved your house, you didn't feel the pain too bad because you were getting so much money for your house anyway, you didn't even know. But in today's world, man, I don't think you can expect to get 8% over list. So you don't want to overdo it. There's certainly some tricks that you can make to make your home look great without putting a ton of money into it. One of my favorite is your kitchen cabinets. A lot of folks have those plain 90s pine cabinetry, and it's expensive to change out all of that cabinetry. So what if you were to just paint it and then go get some stainless steel or brushed nickel handles and you know, screw them on there? It can totally transform what your kitchen looks like and make it look beautiful. Doesn't cost a ton of money. So before you go put money into your house, please, please, please seek the advice.
Give us a call.
You keep saying that. Yeah, give us a call. But if you're out of the area, not within our area, seek the advice of a professional. Your real estate agents, they may not be interior designers, but they certainly have their pulse on the market, and they're going to give you a good idea of what needs to be done. You want your house to stand out right now because there are potentially some more competitors out there for you, but you don't have to over-improve it. So that's a big one. And then together, number five, probably the biggest of all. Sellers do not stick to their guns in a negotiation. Do not get weak and cave in.
Well, for the average seller, they're not doing this on a weekly basis, right? They're not negotiating, you know, contracts. We do this on a daily basis. And a lot of times sellers will get an offer and that buyer wants repairs or a credit or something, and that seller's afraid that buyer is going to walk away. So they just cave in and give them everything they want so they make sure that deal goes through. And being that we do this every day, a lot of times we can see through those bluffs a little bit and play a little bit of hardball and save you some money.
Yeah, and we also just, we believe in the law of abundance. If it's not that buyer, there's going to be another one there. So if you can put up with another week of being on the market, then, you know, stick to your guns. But in our experience, even in today's market, and we are heavily invested in this market. We're putting four listings on today alone. So it's not that we don't have the pulse on this market, but Andrew's correct. Buyers are going to try. I mean, why not? If you're not in a multiple offer situation, why would you not try? But more times than not, if you stick to your guns, those buyers, and they fall in love with your home, they're not going to walk. Mm-hmm. And if they do walk over a simple negotiation like that, probably wasn't the right buyer anyway. You'd find yourself 2 weeks later putting the house back on the market anyway. So stick to your guns, trust your agents, and go out there and get what you deserve. So, good show. I think that was very detailed.
Yeah.
It felt good to be back in the seat again. It was good to be here in Darling New Media Studios in Sacramento again. And we're looking forward to next week. We're going to have our special guest, good friend of ours, incredible lender. They can get things done lickety-split. Today we wrote an offer and it's 17-day close. That's awesome for negotiation. So stay tuned and we will see you next week.
See ya.